Hello and welcome to Inside Ouch. I'm Emma Tracy. Now this week, disabled campaigner Doug Pawley won a case that he has been fighting for nearly 5 years. It's been dubbed wheelchair v buggy, and it's a thing that a lot of disabled people know plenty about. It's when the priority space on a bus is taken up by a baby buggy. So you can't get on the bus and you don't know whether the next bus that comes along is going to be accessible or when the next bus is going to come on. And it's a big problem for disabled people. So Doug was trying to get a bus in 2012 on his way to lunch with his parents. And the space was taken by a woman with a baby in a buggy who refused to move when asked by the bus driver. The bus drove off. He was an hour late. So he took the company first bus to court and won. Then he lost on appeal. And then this week he won in the Supreme Court. And what he was looking for was a bit of clarity that the priority spaces are specifically for disabled people, wheelchair users or people with other impairments, and a clarity on what drivers need to do if the space is taken by someone who isn't entitled to it. The ruling didn't go as far as Doug Pawley's lawyer would have liked. It doesn't mean that drivers have to force people out of those spaces, but it does mean that they need to make more effort. So we know about Doug Pawley's ability to take a company to court and win on the grounds of discrimination. But who is this guy? We interviewed him on the podcast in 2014, Rob Crossan and Kate Monaghan presented, and he told us all about his life, possibly surprisingly, in a care home.
I don't know about if I chose to live in a care home. It just kind of happened. I mean, back when I was 23, I was in hospital. I really, really, really wanted to get out of hospital. And I was given the option of this care home, or that was all they could come up with, really, to fit me. But I've just been there ever since, really.
When I think about care homes, I think about my grandma who lived in one for a while and sitting around in a miserable lounge, staring at a telly, blurring out, nobody being allowed to change the channel. Is that what it's like?
It is in a lot of care homes, but happily, mine isn't, or the one I live in isn't so much. I've stayed in quite a few over the years, as have been, and ours used to be more like that, but it's got younger people in who are a bit more kind of, upfront, and yeah, it's not as bad as it used to be, I think. But a lot of them still are.
And what did it used to be like then?
Used to be much more institutional, health and safety based, can't do rather than can do.
How did things come to change?
I guess that partly the clientele changed. I mean, the home moved. I mean, it's a Lena Cheshire home, and they're traditionally in old mansions in the middle of nowhere. And just before I moved in, it moved down into the centre of a town. And a lot of the people that moved down with it sadly passed on within a couple of years. Then they got new people like me.
And also be a sort of generation who's now ageing, like I'd say the baby boomer generation, and their expectations of what their dotage is going to be like is a lot higher. They want something a bit better than a Parker Knoll chair and watching ITV all day. Would you say that the generational thing has made what standards have been forced to improve, really?
I guess so, but also it's not been people who are retiring into the home so much. It's mostly younger disabled people who are there, people who've moved in as a result of increasing impairment or breakdown in support structures elsewhere, or just moved in straight from residential school.
There's independent living bills, you know, I mean, you've got the right to live independently, but yet it's not just you, you're saying. There's a whole heap of people in their 20s and 30s who are living in care homes. Well, what's going on? Why?
I know, it's very sad, isn't it? And a lot of people are in homes that are a lot worse than mine. I mean, we've got 4 flats as well as 13 independent rooms. Other homes haven't got that. I guess partly because it's cheaper. I mean, I think that's why the government put a stop on the independent living fund. I don't know, sometimes I think it's a lack of impetus and imagination in providing alternative services and accommodation that is more suitable. I guess that's why I'm still there, to be honest.
What would happen if you met, or already have met, the woman, or indeed man, of your dreams, and you decided that you wanted to take the step to get married and maybe have a baby? Could you all live in the care home happily?
I'd love somebody to try that. I would absolutely love there to be the situation where there's somebody pregnant in the care home or having a baby. I'd think that Lena Cheshire would have a bit of a hissy fit and try and work out what to do and come in a right tangle, and there'd be a massive stress about it with them and social services. I don't know quite how it would end up, but it would be interesting.
Well, of course, Lena Cheshire aren't here to defend themselves. In an ideal world, would you rather live somewhere else, or do you quite like it there now?
There are advantages and disadvantages. You see, I don't think that the grass is always greener outside of residential care. It can be, like, quite disadvantaged in that you've got times when carers will be turning up in a way that could be more institutional. It could be more lonely because you've not communal living, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I've always got my eyes open for alternatives.
So can you sort of take us through an average Doug day? What do you get up to?
Well, I volunteer in an Oxfam shop twice a week. I help out at various at church and at other places. I either arrange in advance when to get up, or I ring to get up and somebody comes and helps me to get up. Yeah, I've got a three
You don't have a curfew
flat.
Or anything, do you?
No, no.
So you could go out clubbing and come back at 2 a.m. and there'd still be somebody to let you in?
I've got the number to get in, but yes, and there'd still be somebody to help me to bed, although I might have to wait if they were busy. Yeah,
so the
stay up late campaign doesn't... There's some things that you're insulated from, I think, in a care home. We don't have the whole stay up late problem.
Do you think more of us should be looking at this as a real option then? Everybody strives for independent living, but actually is it not too bad in a care home and this should be a real option?
I think that my care home is better than most and better than all the others that I've seen. I'll accept their payment later for saying that. But I don't think that ultimately it is the future, no. It can be quite separating. It's interesting the assumptions that are made. Like I wrote to our MP and said it's not good that they were trying to stop mobility allowance for anybody in residential care. And he just wrote back and said, well, thank you for your letter about older people in residential care. He made the assumption straight away that I was older, you know.
I mean, what kinds of people have you met in there? Has it generally all been older people, or have you made some good friends your own age? Are you by far the youngest?
I was the youngest.
And what are they like?
I was the youngest when I moved in. I'm no longer the youngest. There are two people younger than me. There's a variety of people, really. Everybody that's been in there has been white. I noticed that the other day. And most of the carers are black African people, but the residents, inmates,
all of them
have been white.
Inmates?
Why do you think that is, Doug? What is it about it that makes it a predominantly white environment?
I mean, I'm from Oldham originally, which has got a very high Asian population, and Asian people tend to look after their own families more than we do in-house. I don't know why that is.
Have you found yourself prematurely adopting old man habits? Do you now have a sort of real love of Werther's Originals, and do you think all modern pop music is rubbish? Have you found yourself?
I don't know. I have this fight against being institutionalised.
Mm. It is a fight. You could easily sink into that sort of, you know, prematurely aged demeanour, I suppose.
Yes, and I'm not being critical of people who do, because you do sink under the strain of the institutionalisation, you know? Mm. A lot of people have done through absolutely no fault of their own, and it's very sad. And I will have done to a certain extent, but I guess that I've just got this bullshit streak in me that's different from other people. Sometimes I wish I didn't have it.
Well, let's talk about this bullshiness, because, I mean, First Bus aren't the only company you've challenged under the Equality Act. I mean, the Disability... is it DDA? Disability Discrimination Act before that.
Discrimination.
Yes.
That's right.
So what other cases have you taken on then, Doug?
There's a lot of cases that never make it to court. The last one, which was face-to-face, that we haven't talked about. I've got a case where I've just won the right to take carers to the theatre at no extra cost.
I thought carers always went free.
So did I, until we tried to book at the Barbican in York, SMG, and they've finally been forced to publicly admit that they had a discriminatory policy when they tried to charge us double. You know, there was a group of us going to the theatre from the home, and they wanted to charge the same price for the carers as they did for us.
Well, what's the next one on the horizon?
I've got one on the cards against train companies. Following a trip down to my great-aunt's funeral last spring, where they struggled to provide accurate information about the accessibility of stations and trains and such like.
Oh, trains, I hate them. Oh, my yes. Gosh. That will be a really important one. I remember getting left on a train at Euston for about half an hour because somebody forgot to phone ahead and tell them that I was in a wheelchair on the train and I was just left.
What, when the train had reached its destination?
Yeah.
And there was nobody there to get you off the train?
There was nobody there, so I just sat at the door and I was like, oh, I want to kill somebody right now.
Oh, I've had that so many times. Have you had when you've tried to get off at an intermediate stop and you've just had to kind of jam the doors because it would go off with you on otherwise?
Have you got any questions for Doug Lee at all? Anything you're interested in with his campaigning spirit?
I just wondered, Doug, what you see as the barriers to perhaps if you decided that, you know, you'd done your stint in the care home and decided that you wanted to move out. What are the barriers for you?
It's difficult, and I've got an unpredictable impairment, and it's difficult because a lot of the time I don't need assistance. But on the other hand, I need somebody available at very short notice if something goes wrong. So it's a combination of having high needs and low needs. It's finding suitable accommodation and suitable assistance that can kind of meet those criteria, really, and going through all the funding, particularly at the moment, everything's doom and gloom and under the condemns and such like.
Do you find your this crusading is becoming a bit tiring? And, you know, is it likely to come to an end, do you think, imminently? Because it sounds like it's been quite exhausting.
It is exhausting, and it's always at personal cost. I mean, sometimes people have said to me that they think that I do it to make money. I don't. Or that I get some kind of perverse pleasure out of it. I mean, obviously, when I win a change, then I get a certain amount of satisfaction out of it. But ultimately, every time I take something on, there is a personal cost to me and my mental health and my time, my physical health even sometimes. But I feel compelled to do so, so I can't see myself stopping. But there is an interesting problem at the moment trying to take stuff on legally, in that effectively nobody can afford to take action under the Equality Act anymore after a set of changes which have just happened.
What's happened?
It's kind of complex, but the government brought in this law, the Legal Aid Sentencing and Punishment of Offenders Act 2012, which was designed to stop the ambulance chasers, from what I understand.
The no-win, no-fee thing?
Yes, that's right. So the legal costs in cases under the Equality Act are an order of magnitude out of the compensation that you can get. Compensation that I earned, if you want to call it earning, from the Barbican was £1,500. But I had to take out insurance against the other side's costs because you always have the chance of losing, no matter how strong your case might be.
Right.
You have to be aware that you might be saddled with the other side's costs.
As well as your own.
Yes, that's right. So whilst my solicitors, who are fantastic, and my barrister, who is fantastic, were happy to take it on a no-win, no-fee basis, you have to insure yourself against the other side's costs. And previously, it's always been the case that that insurance premium has been payable by the other side, should you win.
How much money is that?
I think in this case, it was £22,000.
Whoa! Mm.
I know, it's incredible, isn't it? And that was just the insurance premium.
So the insurance is £22,000 and you win £1,500 or
£2,000?
That's right. That's crazy!
Right. Isn't it? And that's the tip of the iceberg of the costs involved as well. I mean, our side have got their costs, the other side... It's incredible. So it's effectively impossible to enforce the Equality Act anymore.
So we did get a statement from the Ministry of Justice. The spokesperson there said, at £2 billion a year, we have one of the most expensive legal aid systems in the world, and we've reformed the system to ensure we get value for every penny of taxpayers' money spent. We reformed no win, no fee cases to stop lawyers from doubling their fees through payments charged to the other side, which had encouraged claims driven up by insurance premiums for everyone and ultimately prevented schools and others from staging activities. We have now redressed the balance so that anyone making a claim now also has to consider carefully the costs involved. However, people with good cases should still be able to pursue them.
I spoke to Doug today and he says that he still lives happily in the care home and also that he continues to campaign for disability rights. In fact, he's got a case coming up with a pub whose renovations mean that he can't get to their accessible loo. You've been listening to Inside Ouch. I've been Emma Tracy. If you want to get in contact with us, you can email ouch@bbc.co.uk. Find us on Twitter @BBC Ouch or like us on Facebook.